You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to chumbacasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What if the vampire stories never stopped? We just failed to evolve how we look at them, like we've evolved how we look at spirituality in general. Strip away the Hollywood capes and the gothic castles, and you're left with a very old pattern. Something intelligent, something not quite human, feeding off the life of human beings. In the ancient world, that looked like gods demanding blood on stone altars. In the Middle Ages, it looked like corpses that wouldn't stay in their graves. In the 20th century, it looked like cattle mutilations or elite blood rituals and experiments in secret labs. Today, maybe it wears a white coat, maybe a tailored suit, or perhaps even a Silicon Valley hoodie, and it tells you it's all for your health or for science. Underneath all of those costumes is one idea. Life is in the blood, and something wants that life that isn't supposed to have it. Now, from a biblical angle, that's where this whole thing actually starts. Long before Dracula, long before Transylvania, you have this blunt statement in Leviticus: for the life of the flesh is in the blood. But that isn't just poetry. That's essentially a legal principle. That's God telling Israel, you don't drink this, you don't eat this, and you don't play with this, because the blood belongs to me. Every ritual, every sacrifice is built around that boundary. When the priests sprinkle blood on the altar, it isn't just about gore, it's about who owns life and who doesn't. If the blood belongs to God, then every system that tries to drink it, eat it, hoard it, or traffic it outside of him and his terms is automatically anti-God. That's the skeleton key for vampirism. Not just as a monster, but as an entire way of running the world. Go back even further, before Leviticus, to Genesis 6 and the Watchers. However you parse that passage, the picture is ugly. Beings from the unseen realm, crossing the boundary, taking human women, producing hybrid offspring, filling the earth with violence. Extra biblical texts like 1st Enoch fill in the gaps and they give us a world where those watchers teach forbidden arts, sorcery that uses blood, enchantments that twist human bodies, plants and metals turned into weapons, the Nephilim become predators, devourers of the flesh and drinkers of the blood. It is a world where the image-bearing human body is treated as a farm, a resource. You could argue that the first vampires were not some random undead peasants. They were half-divine warlords and the spirits that rode upon them. They were the original elite to some. They had hybrid bodies, long lifespans, and bottomless appetite. The flood is not just a natural disaster in that reading, then. It's a literal power cut. The water isn't only washing away sinners, it's severing an old blood technology from the earth. After that, new rules. New covenants. Explicit bans on consuming blood. A bright line painted in red around the idea of life extraction, if you will. So, what did those entities do, if you take that literally? If the flood cuts them off from open rule, they must adapt. They go underground. They attach themselves to bloodlines, to empires, to cults, to any agency, governmental, or any other type, whether it's domestic cults, whether it's abusive fathers, whether it's McDonald's, whether it's Hillary Clinton. Every system, ancient to modern, that builds itself on sacrifice and blood becomes a kind of black market life pipeline. And you can watch that pattern fairly easily move through history. Mesopotamian demons that prey on babies and pregnant women, the Lilitu and later Lilith traditions where a night creature steals life from the vulnerable, Greek stories about Lamia, a woman turned child-devouring monster after her children are taken from her, early Christian demonology picking up on these figures and describing spirits that suck energy, vitality, and sanity from humans, sometimes specifically through blood. Also note that sometimes it's through sexual exploitation or nightmares. It's all the same structure. Something that can't generate life on its own, trying to parasite it from those who can. But then Christ shows up with what you could call the ultimate anti-vampire move. Jesus Christ offers his own blood as a literal once-for-all sacrifice. The message under the theology is brutal. You don't get human blood anymore. If there's blood to be poured out, it's gonna be my blood. If there's life to be given, it's gonna be my life. You don't drink my people. You don't eat my people. My people drink from me. Communion, then, from that perspective, is kind of this active spiritual war against every system that feeds on humans. Heaven runs on self-giving. Hell runs on extraction. Now, put that in the background and look at the rest of history as one long adaptive strategy from the other side. If they can't openly rule as God kings and Nephilim warlords anymore, and they can't just drink blood on open altars without running straight into divine judgment, what do they do? Well, they adapt again. They make copies. You get blood cults hidden behind respectable temples. You get little pockets of child sacrifice in Canaan that refuse to die. You get empires that demand rivers of blood for the sake of the gods, but are always suspiciously run by human elites whose power never seems to decay. And at some point, that turns into aristocracy and obsession with bloodlines. Royal blood, noble blood, pure blood, intermarriage to protect the line. Sure, some of that is just politics and property. But if you put it on the conspiratorial lens, if you dare to think outside the box, you can ask the question nobody in polite society wants to ask. Was someone else feeding off those carefully curated bloodlines? In the medieval and early modern vampire panics, the pattern shows up in a very distorted way. Villages dig up corpses that don't rot like they expect them to. The bodies are bloated, the hair and nails seem longer, and there is blood in the corners of the mouth. The people don't have germ theory or postmortem biology, but they do have a deep inherited terror that something is refusing to give up its claim on the living. What's interesting is how often those vampires are tied to things like land rights, inheritance, unresolved debts. A father who abuses children and wouldn't share property is believed to come back to harass them. A man who cursed his neighbors returns as a bloodsucker. The body becomes a kind of legal filing cabinet, if you will. And as long as there's flesh on the bone, the spiritual claim isn't fully closed. This is a direct opposite to the 7-year plan to extinguish debts. The people solve all of this vampire, as they call it, issues with stakes and fire. But from a biblical angle, you can read these tales as desperate folk attempts to shut down parasitic spiritual contracts. They know something was attached. They just didn't have the language for principalities and powers. By the time you hit modern Europe, the vampire is a literal aristocrat. Dracula isn't a random corpse. He's a count. He owns land, castles, and titles. He controls peasants like cattle. He has an army. His curse is literally tied to blood and lineage. Stoker may have been writing fiction, but he was picking up on a real suspicion about those who rule, that their wealth is built on drained lives. This is the way that real artists work. They actually put messages within their art. And he talks about how they have a different relationship to death and decay than the people under them. In conspiratorial terms, Dracula is an admission slip. It says out loud what people already feel in their gut but cannot say, because they'll be censored in one way or another, or it's just too dangerous of a truth for the narrative. Fast forward again, and the pattern morphs into science. If the spiritual law is that life is in the blood, and if rebelling powers want that life without kneeling to the one God who owns it, then the modern project is pretty dang simple. Find ways to mine life from blood without looking like a cult, without looking like a vampire. Call it medicine, call it longevity research, call it wellness, call it science. Build labs instead of temples. Put the altar under fluorescent lights. You can see it in the obsession with life extension. The respectable side of that is it's easy to recognize. Transfusions, organ donation, stem cell therapies, anti-aging clinics. Some of these things genuinely help people, don't get me wrong. But on the other hand, there's a whole nother layer. You keep hearing stories about young blood trials, where plasma from young donors is given to older clients to improve health markers. You see companies pop up promising to use the blood of the young to rejuvenate the old. Old people increasingly taking organs from younger donors. You hear billionaires talking casually about wanting to live to 150 and the stock below them not retiring at normal ages. And this is all to upload their consciousness, to stay on the throne forever.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The open science is cautious, it's limited, and it's often very disappointing. But you have to ask, if this is the stuff they talk about in public, what's being attempted in private, offshore, under classification? To those who would believe that the government, that the scientists, that the dark programs are actually telling you all of the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God, you have been deceived. The idea that the vitality of the young can be transferred to the old is nothing new. That's witchcraft 101. That's folklore 101. You are not some enlightened figure for having figured this out. It's also a perfect modern veneer for a much older hunger. And that's where the whole adrenochrome narrative crashes in. On the surface, adrenochrome is just a compound formed by the oxidation of adrenaline. Yes, I'm aware you can buy it online. The medical literature talks about it in very dry terms. But in the conspiratorial underground, where people actually ask questions still, where people don't take everything that they see online and just run with it as if it's the whole truth, it is something else. It's the distilled essence of terror, harvested from victims in states of extreme fear, supposedly used as a drug by elites to get high, to stay young, to open psychic doors, who knows what else. Now, a lot of what circulates online about adrenochrome is exaggerated. A lot of it is misinformed. A lot of it is weaponized for clickbait. And this is all a part of the machine. Don't get lost in the sloppy details. Look at the shape of the story. Children. Fear. Blood. Elites. The people who buy it. Hidden networks, the people who harvest it, weird longevity, how it was harvested. Occult symbolism is everywhere. It's the same old ritual in lab coat language. It's scientificified. We torment the weak to squeeze out more life for ourselves. In Bible terms, that's straight up Moloch. That's Baal or Baal. That's the ancient vampiric cult model, just with neon lighting and encrypted servers. And even if 90% of the specific claims are garbage, and if 90% of the people even talking about this are just doing it for clickbait or some kind of propaganda purpose, the last 10% is actually asking a terrifying question, and I like to think that that's where I'm at. And that question is, what if the old sacrifices never stopped? They just moved underground yet again. What if demonic entities that used to stand in smoke above stone altars now crouch behind the eyes of people in boardrooms and bunkers, and they're just whispering as they rub their hands together, more, 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 more blood, more fear, more life. The children become just units. The cattle are just units. The patients are just units and units and units. And there's a whole nother layer to this that's less about blood. Less about it as liquid anyway. And more about it as lineage and data. When scripture talks about blood, it's not just biological fluid. It's memory, it's inheritance, it's a literal covenant with God. The blood of Abel cries out from the ground. The blood of the martyrs calls for justice. The blood of the saints is counted and remembered. If you see blood that way, then a vampire is quite literally any system that wants to erase that memory, overwrite that lineage, or hijack that covenant. And by definition, that is demonic. That is anti-God. That is anti-Christ. So you look at eugenics movements, forced sterilizations, genocides, and you should ask yourself, who benefits spiritually from the erasure of entire lines of people? You look at how human remains, tissues, and cells have been taken without consent and turned into patients and patents and products. You look at a world where human genetic material is stored, traded, manipulated by corporations and governments like it's some kind of currency. On paper, yes, that's all just biotech, but translated into older language, and it sounds like this. The life of the people has been bottled. Their blood has been indexed. Their line has been cataloged. The keys to their future bodies are sitting in freezers and databases controlled by a very small number of very wealthy people. If principalities once guarded giant bloodlines and royal houses, why wouldn't they now guard genome vaults and biobanks? Why wouldn't vampirism evolve from fangs in the throat to contracts, to NDAs, and terms of service? If you need something weirder than white coats and boardrooms, then sure, bring in the cryptids, because on the fringes of the modern world, something is still taking blood the old-fashioned way. You have reports still of strange creatures leaving livestock completely drained. In modern entertainment, this is how the vampires defeat their addiction to human blood. You have these things happening, with precise incisions and almost no blood on the ground. People slap the chupacabra label on it, and they laugh. But the tissue evidence is strange. The lack of tracks is strange. The silence from authorities is even stranger. You have waves of animal mutilations where the organs removed are always the same. Reproductive organs, the eyes, the tongues, the blood-rich tissues. And it gets shrugged off as cult activity or strange predators or aliens. But there is a clinical pattern to it that doesn't feel like wolves or teenagers or little gray men. But then there's also the humanoid encounters. Pale, thin figures at the edge of the woods that seem more like sickness than creatures. Wendigo, rakes, all sorts of other cryptids. Some things that radiate hunger and leave people exhausted and sick without a scratch on them. Occultists would call them psychic vampires at times. Entities that don't even need your blood. They need your terror. They need your grief and your despair. Sleep paralysis visitation, where a presence sits on someone's chest and drinks the breath out of them. Shadow figures in hospital rooms right before a patient crashes, witnessed by multiple staff or by none at all. People talk about energy vampires jokingly, but there are accounts that feel suspiciously like the old demonology. From a biblical angle, you confuse all of these, the blood drinker, the fear feeder, the soul leech, the life extender. They're not separate species. They're different masks on the same family of beings. Sometimes they take blood because blood is the densest storage of life. Sometimes they take terror because terror is quite literally the quickest way to shake that life loose and make it vulnerable and available. Sometimes they don't need to be there at all. They can ride institutions, trends, technologies, elites to do the harvesting for them. Look at our attention economy for a second through that lens. We built a world where billions of people voluntarily hook themselves up to glowing rectangles that extract their time, their focus, their emotions, their data, every waking hour. That data is harvested, analyzed, turned into predictive models, and sold. This is the agenda of the gods of the modern technology that you may or may not have heard me talk about. People walk away from a 10-minute scroll session, and sometimes they feel tired, they feel drained, they feel irritable, they're frustrated with their lives, even though they didn't physically lose anything. Somebody hated on them online, and now it's going to impact them the rest of the day. Now you are spiritually vulnerable. What if the blood is the body's life, but there is a sort of digital blood as well, and this is your time plus your emotional charge plus your story? What if principalities that used to feast on literal rivers of blood are content once in a while to drink oceans of rage, lust, despair, and envy pumped through fiber optic veins? In that sort of reading, adrenochrome stories, vampiric cryptids, and elite blood rituals are not just random extremes. They're leaks, soft disclosure. They're moments when the deeper pattern pokes above the waterline and shows its teeth a little like a real cryptid, except it's not a cryptid. It's just still hiding. The real vampirism is not just the guy in the robe with a chalice that you make fun of or that you laugh at or that you see as some kind of conspiracy theory. It's any system that asks you to trade your life for its survival while insisting that you should be f***ing grateful. Meanwhile, the biblical story refuses to budge on that one line. Life is in the blood, and the blood belongs to God. That sets up a collision you cannot domesticate. On one side, you have a kingdom built on poured out self-giving, where the king bleeds himself dry instead of drinking anyone else. On the other side, you have a kingdom built on extraction, where rulers, human and non-human, will quite literally cut any throat, drain any vein, or siphon any soul, even the ones that serve them, to avoid facing death themselves. Every malpractice scandal, every hidden experiment, every Charlie Kirk, every rumor of blood harvesting rituals, every McDonald's burger, whatever, every whispered story of something in the dark taking one more this, one more that, one more child, one more terrified breath, it all slides onto one of those two sides. The really uncomfortable thought is that most people living inside the vampiric systems don't see fangs. They see paychecks. They see prestige. They see votes. They see saving lives and progress and the greater good. They see rights. The demonic, it doesn't need Dracula, my friends. It needs bureaucracy. It needs plausible deniability. It needs something that is half desired. It needs a world so desensitized to blood that it can pour oceans of it down drains and call it waste. It needs a world that thinks of life as a variable in an equation instead of something sacred and owned. It needs a lack of awareness. It needs complacency. If ancient vampirism was a demonic appetite for blood that masqueraded as religion, modern vampirism is the same appetite masquerading as necessity. You don't even have to be a religious person to believe in this concept, because in a way, it has nothing really to do with any specific right or wrong religion. Every culture has a story of this type of process and being. We have to do this. It's for safety. It's for health, they say. It's for the economy. It's for national security. It's for the children. The language will continually change, but the structure never does. Something is always asking, Will you give more life to keep the machine running? And if you say no, then the machine hints that you're selfish, you're crazy, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're an asshole, you don't care about your country, you don't care about your party, you don't care about anything except yourself because you're not giving us your blood, you're not giving us your energy. The revolutionary twist is realizing that vampires don't always look like outsiders. They look like infrastructure. They look like systems that cannot function without a consent input of human life, human time, human fear, human suffering. Your life, your time, your fear, and your suffering continually ask of people who want it, why they want it, and what effect that has on you. The old church fathers saw persecution that way. The empire was drunk on the blood of the martyrs. The Apostle John's vision of Babylon in Revelation shows a literal city that drinks the blood of the saints. In a more modern, expanded sense, Babylon is any global order that treats human beings as consumables. So when you talk about modern vampirism, you can go a lot further than cloaks and covens. You can suggest that the same watcher logic that drove Nephilim to devour flesh is still active. It's just more subtle. It whispers into elites who fear death and promise them longer life if they'll sacrifice others. It whispers into tech barons who believe that they can become like the gods, even of Mars, if they merge with machines and store their minds forever. It whispers into cult leaders who dress up blood rituals as healing and take body parts for whatever reason. It whispers into executives who talk about acceptable loss or human capital, like they're not talking about actual breathing souls. The biblical counter-narrative is not gentle, and Jesus and God, they are not nice about this. Everyone has their own path. There are two tables that you can eat at. Pardon the pun. One is set by a God who gives his own blood for you because you cannot survive without it. And the other is set by powers that would demand your blood and call it a feast. Feeding on God through you so they can elevate themselves. You can tell modern vampire stories a thousand different ways, through adrenochrome rumors, through lab scandals, cryptid attacks, elites obsessed with the youth, but they all orbit that very choice. Maybe the most subversive thing you can say is not that vampires are real, but that they're more organized than you think. They're not mindless cryptids all the time, and they're less supernatural looking than you would expect. The vampire is the policy that drains a people to keep a dying system alive in the same way that it is a Dracula at the vein. And if life is in the blood, then every drop that is taken unjustly, every scream wrung out for someone else's gain, is not just lost in the dark. It is recorded. It cries out. It stacks up as evidence in a court that does not need adrenochrome conspiracies to convict. And vengeance is the Lord's. But this is kind of where a conspiracy turns inside out. Because the question stops being, do elites drink blood at parties? And it becomes, how many ways have we built our entire civilization on tiny hidden acts of vampirism? And what would it look like to unplug from that? The old vampire hunters went after corpses in graveyards and cryptids in the woods. The new ones might have to go after contracts, habits, and quiet agreements that say, sure, take a little more of my life if you give me something back. But with some new theories that I can't mention out loud because I will immediately be banned, I already have been and have had to fight tooth and nail to come back. For this next part, you have to read between the lines and understand that I am saying much more than I am saying. To a certain degree, vampirism has evolved so far that it is nearly unrecognizable as vampirism anymore. There are rumors of systems running parallel to elite ritual horror. And that is that the food system, particularly industrial fast food, is not merely corrupt, but also cannibalistic. Not symbolically, but quite literally. The rumor resurfaces endlessly. Human meat in burgers, human remains in processing facilities, bodies disappearing into the grind. Each time it's dismissed, it's mocked, it's buried, it's thought about as something that you're happy didn't happen in your area. And each time it returns, and that persistence matters. Cannibalism is not just a physical taboo. Biblically, it is the final stage of civilizational collapse. In Deuteronomy and Lamentations, eating human flesh is the curse at the end of rebellion. The moment when a people has lost all sense of sacred boundary. It represents total inversion. Humans become fuel.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Bible is an ancient text, so it speaks in ancient terms. But perhaps the blood does not have to be literal at every single level. Scripture treats blood as more than just a fluid. It is life itself. Drain someone's life slowly, through stress, through chemicals, through exploitation and despair, through obscure food processing, and you have spilled blood without a blade. And from that perspective, these theories aren't random paranoia. They are mythic attempts to describe something people feel but can't quite articulate. That the world runs on a quiet, constant extraction of life, a grind of meat, and that something behind the curtain is very pleased by it. The more people that engage in it, the better, knowingly or unknowingly. Demonic success is not achieved by hiding everything perfectly, but at times, that is the best means of success. It is achieved by making horror normal, by turning sacrifice into process that is accepted gradually, by reducing outrage to fatigue, by turning the most grotesque ideas into memes, into rumors, into entertainment and content. If cannibal and vampirism rumors circulate long enough, people joke about it. If it becomes metaphorical, it becomes acceptable. Victory looks like people half believing that something monstrous is happening and not caring because they feel powerless to stop it. So they just keep consuming, they keep scrolling, they keep eating, they keep Big Mac-ing, they keep participating. That's not exposure. That's initiation. In that sense, the darkest reading of all these theories isn't that they reveal some kind of hidden master cult. It's that they reveal a very successful one, and that we are coming to the end of an age when vampires will once again become very, very evident and very obviously real. We have entered the world of the vampire. We live in the vampire society, where life is currency, where innocence is disposable, where consumption is sacred, and restraint is heresy, and death is often preferred. And if that is the case, then vampirism didn't survive into the modern age as some kind of monster in the shadows. It survived as the very operating system within which we function. But don't forget, every operating system has its mods. So watch your back and protect your neck. The life is in the blood.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.